don't like it. I love it, love it, love it.
This is It Takes Two. Amy Eiler, JJ Gordon here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And to start our program off, we're really pleased to have again Dr. Avesh Nagpal with us. He is a specialist in infectious disease with Sanford Health. Dr. Nagpal, welcome back to KFGO Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
We really appreciate it. The initial reason we reached out to you, of course, is about COVID-19, the pandemic we're currently dealing with. We read something on Friday from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that they noted that a significant number of COVID-19 patients do not recover quickly and instead experience ongoing symptoms such as fatigue and cough. What has been your experience with this?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement to make, and I think our experience here supports the same. Having to deal with this, I now realize how hard your job is to get the best data and facts out there and walk a fine line between, you know, not being an alarmist and still trying to warn people about the risk. So this is really one of those situations where we call it a high impact infection, which means that, many infections will be mild, but that doesn't mean that there cannot be more serious infections. We have already seen that how rapidly it spreads, and some people do get hospitalized and end up on the ventilator and even die from this infection. Most of the people who have those complications are people who have underlying comorbidities or are elderly. But this is another warning that this is not a common cold or a flu, and people do have prolonged symptoms even if they have mild disease. And again, this is not unexpected. When you develop a pneumonia, it can take up to 6 weeks for you to recover. Viral pneumonias typically resolve quickly, but if 20% of people are still having persistent symptoms at week 3, we should not dismiss this infection as a mild flu or a common cold, and we should take it seriously and take appropriate measures to protect ourselves and our loved ones.
Dr. Nagpal, you hit on an interesting piece there, which is how to distill that information down. I imagine, as you said, we see a lot of stuff in our line of business, but I imagine the number of studies, pieces of anecdotal evidence, you must be seeing a lot of this on a day-to-day basis. And I know we've kind of talked about this before, but for new listeners, can you kind of tell us about your personal process of when someone presents you with information about COVID-19, how you take it in and decide whether or not this is something that you feel is worthy of exploring further?
Yeah, that's why I was comparing what we do here to what you guys do when you filter out the news and see what is fact and what is just fiction. So, and times like these make it a little harder because, you know, a lot of people get interested in these things, and they generate a lot of anecdotal evidence, which may or may not hold true when you look at the entire subset of the entire population or a subset of a population. So we do have some journals and some authorities whom we trust more than the others. And then there are different kinds of studies. So the least importance we give to is anecdotal case reports where you might describe one person who had a good outcome or a bad outcome or a complication. What we try to look at is more population-based data or subset-based data to see how many people get infected, how many people end up in the hospital, what kind of complications you see, and what proportion of the people get those complications. So you know, these epidemiological studies really help us understand the disease process initially, and that's why we look at population-based studies out of China, out of Italy, out of New York, out of Seattle. Those were the ones that gave us the best ideas. And then as we move forward and we learn about how to manage these patients, the things that we rely on are randomized controlled trials, ideally, which are very difficult to do when you're dealing with a rapidly evolving situation. What that basically means is that you you randomize people to receive either treatment A and treatment B, and then study a fairly good number of patients to see what was the difference in outcome between the two groups. And when some infection is moving this quickly and is evolving so rapidly and spreading so quickly, and the hospitals get overwhelmed, then it becomes very difficult and sometimes borders on unethical to do studies like these. And this is not the first time that this has happened. We've seen the same problems when we were dealing with HIV epidemic, when we were dealing with Ebola epidemic, and now SARS. So these are known problems. And, you know, I have to take my hat off and acknowledge the work of all the scientists across the world who have gone to great lengths to maintain calm and composure and still follow, you know, guidelines on how best to collect data. And CDC and WHO have both done an excellent job of the same, and some of our drug manufacturers have stepped up their game too. So we are in a very good place right now, even though it doesn't seem like it, but we have learned from past epidemics, and the data has been flowing fast and furiously here. And again, you know, it's a little difficult to do, but we know which studies to trust and which not to, and which counts as better evidence and which doesn't. So we are in a better place that way.
To the average person, Dr. Nagpal, it seems like we're worse than we've ever been in terms of the outbreak of COVID-19 in our community around the country. To you, who's actually working with this disease and around people and are understanding this on a larger level than I am, do you think we're in a worse place? I see these numbers go up. We have 198 active cases in Cass County now as of today. We have 289 in Burley County. I suppose I should probably count Morton County in with Bismarck Mandan. The governor just made news yesterday that he has started a new task force to look into COVID-19 numbers in the Bismarck Mandan area. It looks like it's worse than ever here. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, Amy, that's correct. I think that's a correct assessment. And this is not surprising. I think the last time we talked, or the time before that, we talked about how we did anticipate cases to rise based on businesses reopening, and you know, we were put in a very difficult position where we had closed down for a long period of time, and still we were dealing with active cases, and when we have no option but to open up again because of the social and economic consequences, unfortunately we do have to pay a price, and this is what we are seeing right now. So you know, to control that, little things that we need to do, like take individual responsibility than asking what our political leaders will do for us, becomes more important. You know, we have to take some things in our own hands, like being a little bit more responsible with masking whenever we go out in public. I think there is still a need and an area for improvement. I think this is a very simple thing that we can do. It's like having a very cheap vaccine. It's not 100% protective, but neither is a flu vaccine, but we still encourage that. Even if the mask can reduce the number of cases by 50%, we'll be in a much better shape than we are right now. So I think it's time for more of individual action and ask ourselves what we can do for our community rather than the other way around.
COVID-19 vaccine, where are we at with that, and what do you know about where we're at with that at this point?
I think I'm very encouraged with the progress that I've seen. I'll be honest, I was a little skeptical when I was hearing things about vaccine coming in fall or January or early spring. But, you know, the entire world's scientific community is interested in it, and a lot of drug pharmaceutical companies are working on it. And to its credit, our federal government has committed a lot of money and manufacturing and buying commitment to the vaccine. So that encourages our private enterprise to put more effort into research and development. So I think now we are seeing phase 2 and 3, which are critically important because these are the trials that test the efficacy of the vaccine. So I think we are on track, as far as I can see, to get a vaccine early next year. It remains to be seen how effective it would be. I'm kind of hoping that it would be effective because the virus doesn't seem to be mutating as much. So I am fairly optimistic that we could potentially get a vaccine early next year.
Would you be at all nervous about that vaccine being new to the market and not knowing its effectiveness?
So no, because, you know, even the vaccine manufacturing and licensing is a very complicated process, and vaccine is the most thoroughly vetted medication or any kind of product that's put out into the market. And I think the integrity of the process is maintained, and it's very transparent, and there's a lot of oversight. So I think we are not shortcutting any methods. We are just accelerating the methods and reviewing data in real time rather than just accepting more risk and having a substandard vaccine. So I'm comfortable with how the process looks like. It's a very standard process at a more accelerated pace.
Dr. Nagpal, this has been one of the amazing conversations we're having with you. And you can find them at KFGO.com in the It Takes Two podcast section. We appreciate your time. And gosh, you know, COVID-19 is so fluid.
It is. You know, I don't know if, Doctor, you want to make a statement on this, but I'll ask this question because it did come into our text club with the rising cases of COVID. Do you believe that we need to shut down again? Do you have feelings on school reopenings? Do you have any opinions on that?
So, you know, these are kind of a little bit... these are statements that have a political side to it. So I have to be careful in what I say. But I will say, my job here is to provide scientific data and evidence and discuss the epidemiology of the disease. And as you can see, these are not very straightforward answers to give, and that's why we are having so much debate. Having said that, you know, it really doesn't help closing the schools in isolation when we have other businesses open, because it's impossible to keep kids at home all the time, and they will go to other places and intermingle with their friends and pick up the infection there anyway. What school closing does do is protect teachers a little bit, because they have the option of not going indoors in a large group of people and protecting themselves by not going out. But then again, we have to balance that with one of the greatest public programs that we have in our country, which is a basic education for everybody, which is what makes our community great, which makes a level playing field for everybody. And keeping the schools closed puts the disadvantaged groups at even more disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So I think if we are opening up our other businesses, we should open our schools too. But I also want to acknowledge the fears of the parents and teachers, and I think we just need to be a little creative. Maybe we can have reduced size of classes or a staggered attendance through the day, or, you know, split the school into, you know, a few days where some students attend and few days where some other students attend. And the teachers who are at higher risk category for complications, they could potentially do online classes, but children can still be in school where they can have structure and consistency about their learning, which is also very important and one of the great things that we have going for us as a community, as a country. So that's my opinion on the schools, if you ask me, both medical and as a parent and as an infectious disease doctor. You asked about businesses closing again. I really don't want to do that, because there is a great social and economic cost that we have to pay for that, and it's going to be very difficult to do that. And that's exactly the reason why I said that instead of asking what our government can do for us, what our community can do for us, we should be taking a responsibility on our own. If all of us wear masks, I think we can get COVID under control in the next couple months. So we can still operate businesses. We just have to take individual responsibility on not spreading the disease and protecting ourselves and our loved ones. And and the masks only work when everybody is wearing them. They work for individuals too, but as I said, they are not 100% protective, but when everybody is wearing them, they have a much larger benefit.
Dr. Avesh Nagpal, you are a voice of reason, logic, and intelligence, and we appreciate that about you. I feel like I should just take that clip and just play it over and over and over again. Dr. Nagpal is a specialist in infectious disease with Sanford Health. Thanks so much for joining us again. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Amy and JJ.
This is It Takes Two. Amy Eiler, JJ Gordon here on the Mighty 790 KFTO. We'll be here until 2 o'clock. We've got a real estate update for you, an hour-long real estate update coming up at 1 o'clock. All your real estate questions will be answered. You'll be able to talk to the experts. S&P is up 27, the Dow is up 98, and the NASDAQ is up 104. Stocks are actually in the green today. Sarah Heinrichauer, Ag Markets Looking.
Well, we've just been talking very